Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Well, I'm New York City, born and raised. But nowadays I'm lost between two shores. LA's fine, but it ain't home. New York's home, but it ain't mine no more. I am myself. And no one heard at all, not even the chair.
That's me, lost between two shores. Thank you, Neil Diamond. So I got home, Nome, Monday night, in time to watch Celebrity Apprentice. And as I got home, I checked my messages. And one of the messages was, can you get back on an airplane and go back to Los Angeles? We have this other television project we want you to do. So I'm back in Los Angeles. I can't believe it. I've been doing all my sleeping on airplanes, but...
Can you talk about it or no?
Because it's another one of those big surprises.
It's a cool surprise, yeah.
It's a cool surprise. Let me...
There's the surprise right there. You blew it.
It's bigger than chock full of nuts. All right, but let's get... ladies and gentlemen, I really want to hear from you. Many of you, if you didn't see it or hear it, we'll play some clips of the State of the Union address last night. And I want to hear from you what you think of it. Now, my impression and the first words that I wrote down were wimpy no more. I mean, who was that skinny, smart-ass, cocky, confident man delivering the State of the Union last night? Is that the same wimp who chickened out during last year's midterm elections? I mean, the Barack Obama last night was laying out an impressive agenda for the nation going forward and pointing out correctly, I think, that the economic crisis is mostly over. Here's how he started.
For all the grit and hard work required to come back, for all the tasks that lie ahead, know this: the shadow of crisis has passed, and the State of the Union is strong.
The State of the Union is strong. I mean, he was like the once scrawny Popeye. He took his spinach, and he came out swinging last night. He laid out an impressive agenda for the nation during the State of the Union. Listening to it, I have to tell you, folks, I was struck by what has been absolutely absent since 2009 was a swaggering self-confidence. I mean, he just didn't have that during his entire presidency. And given the fact that he led his Democratic Party to one of the worst midterm election defeats in recent history, I found it surprising and not a little refreshing. Why? What liberated him? Yeah, play cut 15.
I have no more campaigns to run. My only agenda, I know because I won both of them.
Ooh, yay, good comeback. All right, let me just say, I want to give you a full disclosure. I really like Obama's ideas on the domestic front. He's done a good job on the economy. You can't deny that. We do need a dramatic hike in the minimum wage, and if you don't like that, you give me a call. But I think that it is absolutely appalling that people still make under $8 an hour. You know, it's slave wages. We got to get past that. We have to raise the minimum wage more broadly. I agree. Even though I would be impacted by a new tax code, I think we need one that makes more sense. I mean, the fact that 1% owns, more than 99% worldwide and all the rest of that, I mean, that's real. That's real. I like this idea of community college for everybody for free. Everybody should have a community college degree, an associate's degree. you know, to equip them in a very complex world going forward. I mean, we have to figure out who's going to pay the $60 billion it's going to cost. But we have to, I think it's a great idea. Just like I like charter schools, I like pre-K. I mean, the more education America and Americans have going forward in this high-tech world we're engaged in here, I think the better for us as a country. We have to. Who doesn't, listening to my voice right now, believe that our vital infrastructure is broken? We need roads. We need bridges. I mean, if you don't think we need roads and bridges, then you don't drive. You been in Jersey lately? And where I think the Republicans, I think Jody Ernst did a good job, the senator from Iowa, the veteran, the one who's going to castrate everybody in D.C., which is, I think, a fine lesson if they're not already castrated by the lobbyist. But I think where she dropped the ball and where all of the Republican chatter I hear about the State of the Union address, I think, misses the mark, is in not whacking the president over his disastrous foreign policy. I mean, Barack Obama's the one who was on watch when ISIS invaded and conquered Iraq and Syria. It was President Obama who was on watch when we lost Libya to Sunni Muslim extremist anarchists. That country is a total mess now, just as I predicted it would be when I was there and almost got killed in 2011. And now President Obama better do something fast, or Yemen is going to be the latest on the list of broken, scary terror camps. But I think all things considered, I think President Obama did okay with this swaggering rhetoric. I mean, his post-speech reality will be more sobering, but at least for one night, he did okay. That's my take. I want yours, as I said, as the show progresses today. But first, let's hear from my friend and Fox News colleague, our chief White House correspondent, my friend Ed Henry. Ed, if you liked this, welcome to the show, first of all. If you liked President Obama before the speech, I think you liked the speech. If you hated him before the speech, I think you hate him. What do you think?
Yeah, there's some of that. I mean, what I was surprised by, to be honest with you, is I've seen a lot of these State of the Unions, as have you, and, you know, the president, whether it's a Democrat or Republican, makes some partisan statements and his party stands, then makes some, like, let's reach across the aisle, and both parties stand. I was surprised last night that it became kind of a laundry list of just a whole bunch of Democratic priorities. Yeah, there was some reaching across the aisle, but coming out of those midterms where the president clearly lost, he said himself that, you know, even if you're a fan of the president, you have to admit that he said in October, you know, I'm not on the ballot, but all of my policies are, such as raising taxes on the rich, his, you know, free community college, some of these things he's had out there for some time. He lost that election. Now, I think the president's critics should realize that doesn't mean the president should just go away and not do anything for the next 2 years. So good on him for standing up last night and saying, I'm not just going to be a lame duck. I'm going to lay out an aggressive agenda. Then I'm also going to do some executive actions. You may not like it, and I may veto some stuff. So that's fine. He's going to be around for 2 more years and is entitled to lay out an aggressive agenda. But I was sort of surprised there were not more lines in there that were saying, hey, here's 5, 6, 7 things we can work on together. There were a couple of things, trade, tax reform. Then he kind of moved on. It became a kind of a Democratic pep rally.
It seems to me that there are people almost with an alternate reality, a different dimension, and he's talking in one dimension and the Republicans exist in a different dimension. But I also think that if he was so assertive in October, the Democrats might have fared better than they did wimping into the November midterms.
Onto something. Yeah, no, and you know what I think? Actually, I think you're absolutely right that there are Democrats who rue the fact that the president was sort of tentative last year and didn't sort of go for broke, if you will, on, you know, say, implementing the rest of the health care law, threatening Republicans a little bit more for trying to repeal it, you know, standing strong, say, from a Democratic perspective on taxes and not giving in on the middle class that he's sort of mealy-mouthed and milquetoast. Frankly, there's a lot of people on the left who think the president, for all the fire on the right saying the president's a socialist or the president goes way too far to the left, there's actually a lot of people on the left who think that this president has been weak and too much in the middle. And so what I think is fascinating, to your point, is that rather than come out of a midterm election drubbing like Bill Clinton did earlier in his presidency and say, you know what, I'm going to tack to the middle, I'm going to be more of a centrist, I'm going to fix this, this president took the opposite message and is saying, I'm going to be more like Elizabeth Warren, who's sort of firing up the left right now by taking on Wall Street, you know, taking on the fat cats, saying let's tax the rich. He's entitled. It's a free country. He can say I'm going to be really tough and strong in my last 2 years. I'm just not sure he's going to get a whole heck of a lot done if he taxed to the left.
You have a situation here where his popularity is ticking up. He's around 50% in some of the polls I have seen. Is there any fear on the part of the GOP that you speak to there? Ed Henry, my guest, the chief White House correspondent for Fox News. Any buzz that, you know, all this middle class, give this away for free, give that away for free, community college, tax the rich, cut the tax rate on the middle class. Any fear among the GOP that kind of populist appeal might affect the 2016 presidential run?
Sure. I mean, I think there is some fear among Republicans that, look, if Hillary Clinton winds up getting into this, as is widely expected, and you know, I noticed that last night she tweeted, you know, good on Barack Obama, I'm just paraphrasing, but we need to stand up for the middle class and basically was all in and on the Obama approach. There's some fear among Republicans that if they've got another, you know, look, you got Mitt Romney getting back in, rich guy, had a hard time talking to the middle class. Jeb Bush, the jury's still out, again, rich guy, famous family, insider establishment, that, hey, maybe the Democrats are still going to, you know, do that sort of middle-class message that, frankly, as Barack Obama said last night, he won two elections. Yeah, he lost the last one in the midterms, as we pointed out at the top. But he's saying, look, I was elected in 08 on this middle-class message, reelected in 2012. Yes, there's a fear among Republicans that maybe Democrats can carry that into 2016. And, frankly, that's why I think you're right that that's a lot of what the president was talking about last night. He was not talking about getting stuff done with Congress. He was going directly to the American people and saying, you know, let's set up not just the Obama legacy on the middle class, but frame the 2016 election, even though Obama's not a candidate there, saying, you know, this is the Democratic approach. Where I think Republicans have a point, though, is, as you referred to, free community college, you know, that actually costs $60 billion, according to the White House estimate. So he's going to raise taxes on the rich to pay for it. So I think the Republicans have some confidence that in the short term now and in 2016, they can say, hey, folks, there's no free lunch. When the president says free community college, actually, the middle class and the rich are going to get stuck with the tab. They're going to pay for it with their tax dollars.
What do you think of, I got two quick ones, then I got to let you go. Ed Henry, my guest. Joni Ernst, the senator from Iowa, how'd she do?
You know, I thought she did reasonably well. I mean, it's smart for the Republicans to put up someone who's a woman, who's a military veteran, is one of their fiery candidates who, you know, rode into town in that midterm election. You know, did she knock it out of the park? No. But, you know, in fairness to her, you know, seen Bobby Jindal and Marco Rubio and other.
Yeah, at least she didn't, like, drink a ton of water on
camera.
She didn't
fail to, yeah, you didn't do one of those weird moments or something. But, you know, I mean, look. My point is that the megaphone that the president has is so enormous, Democrat or Republican, man or woman someday as president, that whoever does the response has a really hard job. I thought Joni Ernst did a fine job. And, you know, moving forward, she is one of those rising stars in the party. So she did.
But as a veteran, this leads to my last question. I thought she could have whacked him a lot harder on the fact that he lost part of Iraq. It was under his watch, a hunk of Syria, all of Libya. A lot of, misjudgments in terms of foreign affairs and war and peace. I think that's where he screwed up big time.
Well, and you know what? I think you're right that this is something I was saying last night on Fox News, which is that, look, he can talk about the economy and the middle class, and those polls you talked about, his approval ratings coming up largely not just because of his personal popularity or anything. It's because the economy's getting better. Republicans don't want to admit it, but it's getting better, maybe slowly, but it's getting better. And so that lifts his popularity. But I think some of these national security challenges and fear of terror can crowd out some of that positive stuff he's getting on the domestic side. I mean, look at two quick points. Yemen has now come to pieces in the last 24, 36 hours. It looks like a coup, the presidential palace under a fire. And what did the president say in September? He said it was a success story in terms of his counter-terror policies in Yemen. Not so fast, Mr. President. And finally, the last State of the Union a year ago, remember he said we're going to get off a war footing just a few weeks after he had said ISIS was the JV. What did he say last night, 1 year later? I need a new authorization for the use of military force against ISIS. So much for being off a war footing, Mr. President. He's, whether he calls it a war or not, he now wants Congress to pass, you know, an authorization for military force against these terrorists. terrorism never went away, and the president sort of tried to turn the page on that last night. And as you say, I think Joe Dears probably could have done a little bit more on that because it's a vulnerability for him.
Yeah, and no one's booking any cruise trips to Yemen or Somalia, but that's for sure.
Not anytime soon, you're right.
Not anytime soon. Ed Henry, excellent analysis, as always. I appreciate it, mate. Thank you very much.
Get Geraldo now. Get in on New York's most important stories. 866-GERALDO, 77-WABC.
I think there's a very powerful historical commonality between the cities, but these tragedies have shown that, in fact, we are even closer than we realized.
Who is that? Is that Bill de Blasio?
It is.
I didn't want Bill de Blasio in Paris. I wanted Obama at the State of the Union. It doesn't matter anyway. The mayor came back from Paris. He's home. I think it was nice that he went. But anyway, I'm getting off my point. My point is the State of the Union. What do you think? Who was that masked man last night? And where were the Republican voices busting him on his embarrassing failures overseas? You know, they were cowed, it seems to me, by the fact that the economy is ticking up. There's no doubt about it. You cannot deny it. Okay, what do you think of the State of the Union? This is going to be kind of a short segment, but the rest of the show is all about you. I mean, we will be joined by John King, who's the terrific White House correspondent at CNN, and Charlie Rangel will be with us later on. But now it's about you. What do you think? Here's Joan in Brooklyn. Hi, Joan. Thank you very much for calling.
Good morning. I just want to say we keep hearing about community colleges. How about trade schools? I think they're important.
Great idea.
Okay, that's it.
Great idea. I think that's a wonderful idea. And if you're going to, you know, give people practical skills, I mean, an AA degree is great. Don't get me wrong. But it wouldn't be better if you did have, I mean, if you're not going on into some academic pursuit, if you're not going to be a teacher or so forth, you know, to have a specific skill, as the caller, Joan, pointed out, I think is a great idea. We should expand vastly. I mean, in my day when I was coming up, everything was a trade school. I mean, there were so many different trades you could learn. I mean, I don't even know. Does East New York Aviation still exist? I mean, there were a lot of great schools out there. And someone could call me on East New York. Here's Rob in Long Island. What's up, Rob?
Hey, Geraldo. Good morning. The middle class reply by the Republicans need to talk about the burdensome cost of Obamacare. The employer mandate now is kicking in January 1st, groups over 100. The average bronze premium in New York for a single is about $420 a month. If the employer mandate says you got to take 9.5% of your adjusted gross, and that's affordable to an employee, making one company with 100 people, everyone averaging $50,000 a year salary, you're telling someone take $400, give it to an insurance company, and then pay the next $6,300 out of your pocket with no write-off. Obamacare is driving down wages. It's driving down hours. And that should be where the middle class with wages has gotten screwed. You had a GDP growth of 3.8% last quarter. Okay. But over the last 24 quarters, this president has overseen the worst economic recovery on record.
And you know, Rob, Rob should go work for the GOP. You did a better job than they did in their rebuttal. But excellent. I appreciate it. And now here's Noam with the news. What?
On the air, online, and on iHeart.com. We are 77 WABC. Geraldo on the 77 WABC app. Get it before you really need it. WABCradio.com.
This land is your land, and this land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me.
President Obama could have been Woody Guthrie last night, a very populist message. The poor, the working class are suffering at the expense of the rich. He wants to redistribute income, change the tax code, get the infrastructure moving. Talking about a lot of domestic policies. His strong suit, his weak point, as I've been talking about all morning, is, you know, how he snoozed when ISIS grew malignant, took over Syria, Iraq, how he lost Libya to a bunch of crazy Sunni Muslim extremists. But that's my take. I thought the president did a good job, given the fact that he just got routed in the midterm elections. We heard earlier from the chief White House correspondent for Fox News, Ed Henry. Now let's listen to one of the brilliant minds at the other network, CNN, the chief national correspondent, my friend John King, joins us. John, welcome. What do you think of the speech?
Geraldo, I hope my former colleague Ed represented himself Well, what did I say?
Well, he said that he's smarter and more articulate than you, but I said, hey, none of that stuff. We want to get along across the aisle here.
It's a free country. He's entitled.
All right, so what do you think?
That's a good guy. That's a good guy. What did I think? Look, I think that if you're a Republican, you're watching, you think the president's in a deep case of denial. He only wants to remember 2008 and 2012 and forget 2010 and 2014. But this was a purely political speech where the president was essentially trying to prove to his own party, not just the Republicans, trying to prove to his own party that he still had energy and he still had fight. And look, is he going to get just what he wants? Is he going to get the tax increases on the wealthy he wants, the tax increases on financial institutions he wants, the free community college and the other redistribution programs? The answer is no. If you step back, even if you're a conservative, if you step back from your partisan prism and say, why would he do this? Well, you can see the political rationale for it. His numbers are on the way up after the election, a bit of a surprise there. And remember, Geraldo, when George W. Bush at this point was at about 33% and he lost his base, not only would Democrats not touch him because they were mad about Iraq and mad about Katrina, but he lost the Republican base. So the president's number one priority, to me, it was crystal clear, was keep Elizabeth Warren and Hillary Clinton and Nancy Pelosi on his side. The question is, what happens 6 or 8 months from now when they're actually trying to finalize the budget? The Republicans can't pass their priorities without his signature. The president can't pass anything he wants without Republican votes. Do they cut a deal 6 months from now? And is this all about positioning for that? Or is this what we're going to get for 2 years? I think that's the question.
John King, the CNN chief national correspondent, is our guest. Folks, I'm going to get to your calls at 866-Geraldo momentarily. But, John, before I look forward, I just want to look back one question about attitude. Now, I thought, and Ed and I were talking about it, I think now that if this is the guy, if President Obama last night was President Obama last October, the Democrats would have fared better. I think that he was a wimp in terms of not extolling his own virtues and kind of denying his failures. If he had this kind of Popeye-like attitude October, don't you think the Democrats might have fared better?
They might have kept a few of the seats that they lost, but the challenge there, Geraldo, would have been he'd have to be invited into those places where the close races, and he was a pariah.
His own party
would not invite him in. I do think you're hitting on a very important point. I think part of the president's message was last night to Democrats, especially former Democrats who might have been watching, former senators and congressmen who might have been watching from home, that if some of you had this fight, not just me, if some of you had fought like this,
good point,
and fought, that a few of you might have won the close races. Look, I thought it was striking that whether you agreed or disagreed or liked or disliked the theater of Joni Ernst's response, think of the symbolism of that. A newly elected conservative Republican senator in a race the Democrats were not supposed to lose in 2014 from the state that launched Barack Obama. Tells you everything about the shifts in our politics during the Obama years. Yes, he was elected and reelected pretty easily both times, but 31 Republican governors, 54 Republican Senate seats, the biggest House majority post-World War II. Look across the state legislatures at all the Republican gains. I mean, the Obama years have been great for the Republican Party everywhere except 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
You know, it's funny. Every time I see Joni Ernst, God bless her. I love her backstory, you know, from nothing, made herself into, United States senator or military veteran, still a reserve officer, high-ranking colonel, lieutenant colonel, I forget which one. But she's terrific. But I can't not look at her and think of bringing castration scissors to D.C. It's going to haunt her and I think scare a lot of those old-timers in D.C. But here's my final question for John King, the CNN chief national correspondent, before I get to your calls, folks. And it's, are we going to have like a veto city now? Is that what D.C. is going to be about? The Republicans will pass stuff with their impressive majorities in both houses, and the president just slap a veto on them?
It sure looks that way right now. You don't see any change in that climate. The question is what happens after. You've been around long enough to know sometimes the president vetoes the bill, and that's when the serious negotiations start. Sometimes they start with the threat of a veto, and the Republicans would say, well, he's going to veto it. Let's talk now. I think that's the dance and the act of this theater that started last night that we haven't seen play out yet. But look, it's one of the reasons the Republicans say he's not serious, because he has issued now a half dozen or seven veto threats just since the start of the year.
The more, I saw Dredd say, the most veto threats ever. Well, be that as it may. John King, I appreciate it. Thanks, man. You are one of the best in the business.
Take care, my friend.
Okay. All right, so what do you think, ladies and gentlemen? It's all about you now. 866-Geraldo. Go to Mark in New Jersey. What's up, Mark? What are you thinking about?
Okay, Geraldo, this is Clark. My name is Clark.
Clark, okay, buddy.
Okay, listen, you made a comment about the economy. that it's improving and everybody else is, just because Obama says it, which is absolutely false. It's
GDP was up 3.8, right?
I'm sorry?
The GDP was humming along 3.8%
growth. You're looking at numbers that they're feeding us, which I don't believe they're accurate.
You think they're making them up?
Huh?
You think they're making them up?
I think so, yeah. Look at the major corporations that just closed stores. They laid off people. Radio Shack, Barnes & Noble, Staples, JCPenney, Target, Office Depot, Sears. They just laid off thousands and thousands of people.
That's because the internet is cleaning their clock.
I'm sorry?
The internet is cleaning their clock, but go ahead.
What are you talking about? This is on the news. This is on the news.
No, I'm saying the reason the Radio Shack can't compete is because people can buy that stuff over the internet for less money.
Okay.
That's why.
What about JCPenney, Staples, Barnes & Noble?
JCPenney. I mean, when was the last time you shopped at JCPenney?
Okay, now, wait. And another
anyway, well, go ahead. Make your point, Clark.
Okay, that's one point. Another point. There's thousands of points. And here's another one. Have you ever looked at the price of food lately, which nobody's mentioning? This is knocking all the poor people just out of business. I mean, the food has doubled and tripled.
That's wrong, man. The inflation is what, 2, 3%? Gas prices, $2 a gallon? Come on. You got to give the guy credit where credit is due. You're not going to win your argument with me by giving me fake stuff. Now, I think the president has a lot to answer for. This president has a lot to answer. He lost Libya. He lost Syria. He lost Iraq. I mean, he's got a lot to answer for. But you cannot deny that things are better now than they were. I mean, let's be fair. Republicans cannot win. I'm a Republican. We cannot win by pretending that something is Tuesday when it's Wednesday. Can't win that way. James in Long Island, what do you think about James? Thanks for calling 866
or 866. How are you? Just two
Good.
Points, if you allow me.
Go ahead, buddy.
One
Go
thing
ahead.
Is I remember a speech President Obama gave a couple of years ago when he said that we don't mind if the Republicans come along for the ride, but they have to sit in the back of the bus. I think for the next 2 years, it's going to be basically the same thing. There's going to be fighting. They're not going to help the middle class. Yes, things are moving along. Things are getting better. I give him that. But I think he wants to do everything on his own. The Republicans don't want to. They don't want to work together, basically. I'm not blaming one party or the other. They just don't want to work together. And that's the way it's going to be for the next 2 years.
I think you're unfortunately right, and they're going to do nothing. And whether nothing works for the Republicans, I don't think so. I don't think so. We have, all right, give me a minute here. We'll take a short intermission. I want to know what you think. 866-HERALDO, 866-437-2536. You're up next. I'll be right back.
89. That's 1-800-380-7989. 1-800-380-7989.
The headlines, the city's most pressing issues. Geraldo, today and every day. 77 WABC.
7 minutes to 11 o'clock. We're talking about the State of the Union last night. I'll tell you what I liked. I liked the fact that he has opened up, or is opening up, normal relations with Cuba. I've said before, and I know a lot of people hate it when I do, particularly those who are Cuban exiles from the bad old days, or the children, some of the children of exiles. But I'm telling you, how can you be friends with Vietnam, where over 50,000 American GIs were killed, and not have relations with Cuba 90 miles away? Ridiculous. And speaking of Cuba, that horrifying prison camp that the shysters in Washington put in Cuba to evade the United States Constitution, otherwise known as Guantanamo, that has to close. Close that damn thing down. Bring those thugs to the United States. Put them in federal prison. Put them six stories underground in Colorado. Close Guantanamo. Close that shyster's ploy right now. And, Mr. President, what the hell about Keystone? Someone's going to be using that oil eventually. Build the damn pipeline. What the hell? I mean, why are you being so stubborn? Yes, there's climate change and all that, and we get it. But sooner or later, the world's going to need the oil from the sand tar in Canada. Build the damn pipeline. Stop being such a stubborn jerk off about that. Okay, what do you think? It's all about you now. Starting East Rutherford with Mario. What's up, Mario?
Hiya, Carl. How are you? Gerardo, I just want to point something out to you about the Cuban situation. I have friends of mine who lost all their property in the 60s. They owned a couple of houses, like a store and a gas station. They took everything from, there's my brother-in-law, Sam. They took everything from his family, shipped him off to Florida with a gun at his head. Now that everything is opening up, we still have the deeds in the family for the property. So we're trying to get the property back. They want us to buy the property back at today's rates. What's that about, Geraldo?
Well, let me ask you, Mario. I get that, and I think you have a legitimate beef. Would you agree that the Palestinians who were made homeless by the creation of Israel, should those Palestinians also get paid for the property they left behind in Israel? You get my meaning? These are complicated questions. These are not simple questions. What I think, in both cases, you should have some kind of international arbitration where you negotiate some kind of compromise deal. I think that to stubbornly say that, no, you don't get compensated, no, you can't get your property back, yes, you have to pay today's rates, I think that that is why we have conflict. You have to have compromise in that. You agree with that, Mario?
No, I don't agree with it because it's my property. It was stolen from our family. Geraldo, come on. I love you like a brother.
I love you like a brother, too. But, I agree that you should have your right to get your property back. But I think there's got to be some compromise. I mean, I don't know what it is. I'm not that smart. But I think there has to be, just like with the Palestinians, there's got to be some kind of compromise. Cuba owes you, and, how you figure it all out, I think, has to be worked out. But I think you have to be compensated or allowed back into your property in some way, shape, or form. I'm not smart enough to know what the compromise is, but I know that people, if they want a compromise, can find a way. We will be back with your calls after this.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
(866) 437-2536, 866-Geraldo. I'm getting to you in a second. Good morning, New York. Wednesday, January the 21st. It is 6 minutes after 11 o'clock. Last night, the big State of the Union, before I get to it, because I know so many of you are already pissed off at me for generally approving of the speech and the goals laid out by the president, who to me was shockingly confident, self-confident, given the fact that he just led his party to one of their worst drubbings ever in last year's midterm elections. But I'm telling you, that skinny, smart-ass, cocky, confident man, I like that man. I want our president to be skinny, smart-ass, cocky, and confident. Speaking of self-confident, not particularly skinny, but my goodness, he certainly is full of himself, and he does exude an aura of competence. Is Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. A little Israel news before I get back to you all and the State of the Union comments. Israel's government now is going to be investigating the conduct of the 50-day war against Hamas in Gaza. So you know that Israel's under fire. You have Amnesty International in the International Court of Justice in The Hague all looking to sanction Israel over the way it conducted the Gaza war. Many of you were very critical of me when I said, hey, you can't fire artillery shells into civilian neighborhoods and expect anything good to come of it, particularly in terms of civilian casualties and the reaction the international community is going to have to them. And now Israel is going to try and short-circuit that international probe with a probe of its own. I think that's an excellent idea. You heard, I'm sure, if you've been following the news this morning, that the Speaker of the House of Representatives, Congressman John Boehner of Ohio, has invited Benjamin Netanyahu to address the Congress of the United States on February 11th. You know, Netanyahu is engaged in a very tough re-election campaign, which no doubt will be affected by a triumphant visit to this country by the Israeli Prime Minister. He gets standing ovations both sides of the aisle in the joint session of Congress when he addresses. He's more popular with Congress anyway than the President of the United States, probably more than any President of the United States. The Israeli Prime Minister is kind of walks on water in D.C., which isn't necessarily bad. I just think that it's kind of interesting that Netanyahu got the invitation from Boehner and the White House had no idea that it was coming down. As long as I'm talking about Israel, I just want to make one comment, and I know this is going to tick off a lot of you, but I think that this airstrike, this Israeli airstrike that wiped out the Iranian general and the Hezbollah commander in Syria, what was that for? Why is Israel wiping out Hezbollah and the Iranians when the Hezbollah forces that were there and the Iranian commander who was there are there to fight ISIS, to fight the Nusra Front of Al-Qaeda? They're not there to fight Israel. And to take out enemies of the real enemies of the United States and Western interests, I think it made no strategic sense at all. And in Israel, they were asking whether Bibi Netanyahu hit the Hezbollah commander and the Iranian general for domestic political reasons to enhance his reelection prospects. Because I'm telling you, the real enemy of the United States and the West is not Iran, and it's not the Shiites. It's not Bashar Assad, the dictator of Syria. The real enemy of the United States is the people cutting off the heads of Western journalists and committing massacres like the massacre in Paris. It's Sunni Muslim extremists. So why in the world do you kill the Shiite military commanders who are fighting the Sunni Muslim extremists? I can't figure it out. If you can tell me why that helps strategically anybody, any of the good guys, please, by all means, let me know. But let's start with where we've been all morning. Very importantly, I mean, was it a speech just signifying, piss and vinegar, fire and fury, meaning nothing ultimately? Or does this signal a newly assertive and more competent president who can undo some of the terrible things he's done vis-a-vis ISIS and vis-a-vis Libya and all the rest of that and Iraq and Syria and build on these domestic achievements, mainly the economy turning around? Okay, so what do you think? 866 Geraldo, 866-437-2536. We'll start in Staten Island with John. What's up, John?
Hi, Geraldo. Only because I wanted to say a few things. Number one, you're really not a true Republican conservative.
I'm not a conservative. I never pretend to be.
More for Obama than.
I'm not a conservative, dude. I don't ever pretend to be a conservative. I'm not.
No,
I'm a Republican,
whether
you like it or not.
You're definitely not a Republican in my eyes, but I mean, you're more independent, maybe to me, or more to the left. But
as long as you like me.
the other thing I wanted to talk about was regarding Islam. Nobody really is thinking about who wrote the Quran, by the way. It was a rabbi, and nobody wants to really say that, but it was. And Muhammad was a Jewish guy as well, you know?
Oy,
nobody
bay.
Really wants to talk about that.
Oh, my God. That would be some magazine. They'd definitely come and try to blow you up. But, I don't know. I don't know. But I don't know. Noam, do you know anything about that? Is that true?
That's the first I've heard of that.
110%
the first we've heard.
Rabbi, and I think it was a pastor.
It sounds like a Saturday Night Live routine, but go ahead, John.
No,
what's your point?
I mean, if you look at
it could be, could be. What do I know? But what's your point?
My point is that I have to say something. I know you're Jewish as well, but I have to say.
Now, I'm not a real Jew, right?
Okay, well, I'm not a big fan of Israel to begin with. And, you know, I think that the Jewish people as well don't treat Christians very well in Israel either. I mean, look at Bethlehem. They're surrounding the Christians over there. And they put a huge fence around it. They're living like animals, the Christians over there. Coptic priests are being spit at. If somebody wears a cross, they're spit at. You know, Christians aren't treated well at all, either, you know, by the Muslims or the Jews over there. You know?
All right, I get it. I don't know. Noam, you hear anything like that from your relatives?
But I'm more than willing to investigate it.
Yeah, yeah. And I've been in Bethlehem. I was in Bethlehem, by the way, during the siege of the Church of the Nativity. And the folks that were suppressing the Christians or at least defiling their holy places, were not the Israelis in the siege of the Church of the Nativity. It was Palestinian radicals who took over that that sacred place where Jesus was born. It was not, as far as I know, it was not the Israelis who were suppressing the Christians. And I think that Israel does a relatively good job in terms of divvying up all the different religious sects. All right, you got this turf, you got that turf. I mean, it is trying to deal with that is like trying to deal with, a house full of Jewish mothers. It's very difficult. You got this priest, the Coptic this, or the Episcopal that, or everybody's got a piece of the action there in Jerusalem. And I think Israel does a fairly good job putting aside the whole debate over the Temple Mount and all the rest of that. That's not my concern isn't that Israel is suppressing religious freedoms. My big beef is that Israel is not doing anything to move toward a two-state solution, which they profess to still believe in. I wish the president had been more assertive about that. He's not. Okay, in Rockland, here's John. What's up, John? What are you thinking about?
Yeah, Geraldo, in reference to releasing all the rest of these Guantanamo Bay prisoners, you know, you're a lawyer, so you know if they bring up...
Wait, who's that in the background? Who's that in the background?
States, that they're going to have to...
Wait, John. Who's that in the background? You got a baby back there?
It's my grandson.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice. How old is he?
He's two.
Congrats, Mazel Tov. So, all right. So, I'm not saying release the Guantanamo people. I said put them in federal prison. What do you need a prison
camp? Bring them over here. They're gonna have to put them on trial. They're gonna get constitutional rights. Correct.
They have to have rights. Why are they in prison? Hold it. If they are being held in a prison camp, and we don't know what they did, I mean, is that right? I mean, now some of these people have been held for over 10 years.
We know that the ones that we released, a lot of them went back to the battlefield.
Well, you know, if I put you in prison for 10 years, uncharged, and then I let you go, you're going to be pissed off at me or you're going to be my friend? Come on. This is a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's ridiculous. Guantanamo sucks. It should have been closed a long time ago. And it's just BS spending hundreds of millions of dollars to keep that prison camp open for no reason. There has never been, I don't know, maybe someone knows something that I don't know. When was the last time a high-value prisoner escaped from a federal facility, a maximum security federal prison? Never. It never happens. When was the last time we lost one of these terrorism trials where the terrorist on trial in federal court was found innocent? When was that? Did that ever happen? I mean, we have to stop this BS. You listen to BS from people who invoke patriotism and national security, and they don't give a damn about that. They're making a political point. Guantanamo is a political animal. It has nothing to do with national security. I'm not saying release those people or even remand them back to the countries where they came from. Bring them to the United States, put them on trial. Show me the evidence that indicates that this one did this for Osama bin Laden or this one did this for ISIS. Show me the evidence. Why are they being held? If you don't have the evidence, then stop it. Then stop this crap already. Why are we doing this to ourselves and wrecking our reputation internationally? It's like a stupid thing. Has nothing to do with national security. Just a bunch of crybabies that are pretending, oh, woe is me. Look at this. We need to keep these people off our shores because they're going to infect us. They're going to infect us. And how about James Holmes? The guy in Aurora that killed all those people in the movie theater. Let's send him to Guantanamo. Let's send him to the prison camp. We don't have to put him on trial. It's BS. It's un-American. It's over. And the president should have the courage of his convictions, and shame on him for not closing that damn thing years ago when he promised he was gonna. All right, your call 17 minutes after 11 o'clock.
Geraldo, the truth behind the story for New York. Live, local, on it. 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
24 minutes after 11 o'clock. Thank you for tuning us in here at 77 WABC. Geraldo here, along with my partner, Noam Layden. Mr. Layden, how you doing?
I'm doing just great, thank you.
So would you watch the State of the Union, or you just say, it's just nothing?
I was asleep before I came on. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, what time do you wake up, though?
I wake up at 2 o'clock.
I like the pageantry, though. I don't know. You've got to see when he comes out. He like the guys like Elliot Engel from the Bronx. He's always in the front row. He gets there like 24 hours ahead of time. He like camps out so he could kiss the president's cheeks and ass and get on TV. It's cute to watch. I love the pageantry.
What does he do if he has to go to the bathroom? He gets there like 10 hours before.
He wears those man pads or whatever.
Oh, maybe he does. Yeah, adult diapers. Yeah,
yeah, adult diapers. That's what it is. All right, 11:25. What do you think? Let's go to White Plains and Rich. Thank you for calling 866 Geraldo. What are you thinking about, Rich?
Oh, well, now that you mentioned it, the State of the Union, you know, that you watched it, I didn't. Ask me why.
Why?
Why would I take seriously the words of a man who PolitiFact deemed told the lie of the year?
Which one?
You can keep your doctor, you can keep your health plan, PolitiFact, lie of the year, Obama. Come on, Geraldo, you know.
All right, so that's good. So you don't want to hear anything he has to say. He's the president. I mean, it could affect your life.
Oh, everything he says is a lie. Let me ask you another question. He refuses to use the words Islamist and terrorist in the same sentence.
Yeah, he's wrong about that. You're right about that one. I give you that. But I think that he should say precisely the way I say it. Sunni Muslim extremists. That's the way he should say it. Not Islamic and all that. Sunni Muslim extremists. The Shiites have no bone to pick with us right now. It's the Sunni Muslim extremists.
If that's the reason, if he wants to distinguish the faith from the terrorists, why does he hand out prayer rugs and Korans to the people in Guantanamo? Why did he give Osama bin Laden a proper Muslim a burial?
Hey, that's respect, man. Come on, Rich. Don't be that hard ass. That's disrespect. Rosario. Hey, Rosario, what's up?
Hi, Geraldo. How are you today?
Nice to talk to you. So, where are you from, Rosario?
Originally from Camagüey, Cuba.
Cuba. So when was the last time you were home?
Oh, 1962 when I departed.
Wow, wow. Yeah. Do you want to go back?
American that I am, Cuban.
Yeah, you certainly are. But, I mean, do you want to go back? Do you want to see where you
I will go back
brought up?
When the idiot dies. And I don't give him any more of my money. He confiscated everything from our family. My father came originally from Spain, was a self-made man, and he got up one day, like a year or two afterwards that he won, and he confiscated everything. And not only us, families, the scores of families, Cuban families, people had heart attacks, families were broken up, and on top of that, even American enterprises were all confiscated with the sweep of one signing or whatever. It got up one day, and he says, that's it, everything is frozen, I'm communist, I'm coming out. And he was another Hopi and Chenchi guy, okay? So it's eerily similar to what is happening with Obama and Castro. I see the similarities since the beginning. All these promises of socialism.
Oh, Rosario, you had me with a wonderful story, but do you really think the president of the United States wants to confiscate all the private property and nationalize our private firms?
No. I'm not saying that he's going to confiscate right now. I'm addressing the point that you were making about being friendly with Cuba and all that. And I can tell you one thing. I could live with making relations. I was hoping, since these two guys are so old and they have, endured all this time.
Fidel and Raul Castro.
People, I was hoping they would finally die off. And then
they will eventually. They will.
Yes.
We all will.
But we're almost at the end. Why couldn't have we held a little longer? Being the fact that we're not, I can compromise.
No, you know what, Rosario? I have reported over my long career, 45 years, I have reported rumors that Castro was dying at least 5 times. I mean, he's very resilient, but he is deep in his 80s now. He'll pass eventually.
Yeah, well, I understand that. I'm just saying that I'm disappointed that
I appreciate that, and I'm sorry for your loss. But don't you want like some kind of arbitration panel to decide, you know, what you own and what your family owns and all that?
No, listen, I was about to say, I am still willing to compromise it that we're going to open up, okay, as long as they give stuff up, and they haven't given an inch. What, 53 political people that they claim that we haven't even openly verified, that is just being said, and I have to take this government's life.
The political dissidents in prison who were released, and international monitors confirmed.
You know that for a fact.
I've heard that third-party international monitors have confirmed that they're out.
Exactly. Everything is true. I want transparency, like Hopi and Changi, Obama.
Okay, I got that. I like the Hopi and Changi thing, and I'm you're a great American, and I appreciate your call.
Yes, America first. I'm loyal to
America. All right. Okay, America primero. Okay. We'll be right back after Noam gives us the latest news, and man, oh, man, what is going on in New York?
Live, local, on it, 866 Geraldo, where New York comes to talk, 77 WABC.
We've been taking the high road here talking about the State of the Union and, you know, what you thought of it, what I thought of it, whether it was realistic. Isn't it interesting that this is the same president who chickened out in the midterm elections last year? Now he's this assertive, you know, cock of the walk who has an idea for everything. One thing I haven't talked about, I thought it was trivial, so I've been ignoring it. Noam, have you followed this whole Patriots underinflating the football business?
It's a great story, yeah.
I mean, it is a funny story. The thing that I don't know, I mean, now they found that they underinflated the ball, 11 of the 12 balls that they used. I just want to know if both teams had the same underinflated ball, you know what I'm saying?
No, they both have separate balls.
So the losing team had hard balls and the Patriots had soft balls.
You got it.
Well, that doesn't seem
right. Each one can give 12 balls to the ump at the beginning of the game, and then they're supposed to weigh them, and then they play with their own balls during the game itself.
So they used the mushy balls so the receivers could catch Tom Brady's pass.
In cold and rainy weather, right. The softer that ball is, the easier it is to throw and catch.
Oh, well, that really does that does suck a big one. I mean, I guess that, what, are they going to lose a draft choice or something?
Or what? Yeah, I mean, look, the Super Bowl, this is a horrible time for it to happen, of course, because all the excitement of the Super Bowl 2 weeks away. But so they probably will have to do something. But yeah, that's the word, is maybe draft picks. They'll tell them they lose a couple of draft picks.
So, you know, but they it's like victory no matter what. It is cheating. I mean, that's cheating. It's like giving steroids to somebody. I mean, it's just really, it's not fair.
Well, some people would say it was cheating. Other people would say, look, Bill Belichick has always used every single possible strategic, advantage he can have to win a game over the years, and that's why he's been so successful. I mean, that's why he's back in the Super Bowl for, what is it, the fifth or sixth time, something like
that. So what's the buzz on Seattle versus New England?
You know, I think
it's like the puppy against the yuppie.
Yeah, right, exactly. I think it'll be a great game. I don't know. I thought I saw the odds were even pretty as of yesterday.
The question is, who do we root for?
Well, now you got to root for Seattle, yeah. You don't want the guys.
I root for Congressman Charlie Rangel joins us. Congressman, welcome aboard. The president, very feisty last night. I appreciated it. A lot of Republicans are crying foul. I mean, were you surprised that he came out so self-confident, so cocky, given the fact that you guys got beat so badly last November?
Not at all. We got beat because the country had no confidence in the president or the Congress. And I'm a politician, but damn it to hell, they had good reason not to believe that we were producing. And so the president only has 3 years left. He's trying to make improvements at the best he could with the executive authority that he has. And the things that he mentioned has to be done, they're not Democratic issues. Tax reform, immigration, infrastructure, education. And so people are saying that the Congress didn't work because of Democrats. This is one heck of an opportunity for them to come forward and at least present something to the president.
I'm into that. Congressman Charlie Rangel, George.
What?
I was just reintroducing. I didn't properly greet you, my dear friend of more than 40 years. How are you doing? Are you going to run for re-election?
What's that?
Are you going to run for re-election?
Of course not. What I'm going to do is to make certain that this president has an opportunity these 2 years either to push the Republicans into doing something, or you're going to see the defeat as a national party, the whole Republican network. They got to have a candidate, which is going to be very, very difficult for them. Even the reruns are being rejected by the own party. But more importantly, we got to have a legislative agenda. And if you didn't like what the president recommended,
Let me ask you. Wait. Congressman Charlie Rangel is my guest. He's one of the deans of the House of Representatives. Do you think that he made a lot of veto threats last night? Do you think that's what you're going to be witnessing? The United States will witness a dysfunctional government where Congress, the Republicans, pass stuff. They know the president is not going to like. He's going to veto it. Or will it lead to negotiation? What do you think, Carson? You've been around long enough.
Well, I think that if the Republicans really want to be recognized, they know that they won in the past over just knocking down the president, knocking down the Congress, and they've been very effective with it. As a matter of fact, their attitude last night is that they just can't get over it. They don't even know how to clap. If the president was to say that he was going to walk on water and did it, they would say the president can't swim. And so it's going to take a little conditioning for them to know that the economy has improved, that the stock market is up, that unemployment is down, that oil prices are down, and whether they like it or not, we're doing better. But the middle class have not really enjoyed the benefits of
it. I totally agree with that, and I'm in favor of that. Just on the international front, what do you think about Speaker Boehner, your speaker in the House of Representatives, inviting Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to address the Congress without telling the White House?
Well, I don't like any foreigner to be coming to my country and insulting my president, whether they come from Venezuela or whether they come from Israel. And I don't believe that we should do the same thing to foreign countries. And so if I think presidents should deal with presidents and legislators, should have a national interest that's negotiated not with foreign leaders, but with the president of the United States.
Did the speaker do it to give the president a little jab there?
What it is, they're taking advantage of the fact that publicly it doesn't appear that our president sees eye to eye with Netanyahu, but the fact is that a whole lot of people in Israel don't see eye to eye.
I agree with that. Before you lose, I got to ask you about Ferguson and the way the president dealt with that. Congressman Charlie Rangel is my guest. Do you appreciate the way he tried to balance the needs of black families to feel safe when confronted with law enforcement and the fact that cops should be safe in doing their job and their families should know that they are home and have done their job and returned safely?
You know, police are part of the community. They are part of the community's family. And if we have a problem in them unjustly arresting and mistreating people in certain communities, we pay their salaries. We have the right to bring them on the mat and to talk about it. But when murderers and violent people come and attempt to kill them, that is something where the family gets together. We put aside what we are talking about temporarily, and we let the whole world know that I am a policeman. We all are policemen, and that we cannot afford to allow them to believe that the community and the police are not one family. You bet your sweet life. If
all
the
right.
mayor of the city of New York did not have a black son, then he had to tell him what every black father has to say, and that is, for God's sake, whatever you do, don't give them any excuse to take advantage of you. It's kind of hard to carry this badge generation after generation, but I tell you one thing, the same thing is true of the president. You can dislike Republican presidents, and you can dislike Democratic presidents. It just makes it a whole lot easier if you're from the South and you're white and you're part of the Tea Party to dislike the people who come from people who used to be slaves, who used to not have the right to vote, and now you see them in the White House, in the Congress, and in charge of local law.
Whoa! You're saying a lot. You're saying a lot there in a poetic way. You're saying that racism still rules, and that's why the president's being criticized, Charlie Rangel?
Let me tell you one thing. This is the greatest country in the world, a country that someone poor could not even think about coming to the Congress, and certainly someone that of color, a minority group, could not even think of becoming president of the United States. Everybody's trying to get in. No one's trying to leave. But if we are not going to address the question of racism in this country, we will never, never, never be able to handle this. Ken.
All right, I'm out of time. I'm out of time. A comment that everybody agrees with. We got to deal with racism. The way you said it, though, is very provocative. Congressman Charlie Rangel, I expected no less. I appreciate you. And ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back 47 minutes after 11 o'clock. Thanks, Congressman.
Live and local, the Tri-State's most important issues with Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
5 minutes to high noon. They're going to wrap up what we have been talking about, this State of the Union. I take one more call from Keith in Connecticut. What up, Keith? What are you thinking about?
Hey, my brother from another mother. I was listening to Charles Rangel, and man, it frustrates me. I'm Irish, Italian, German, grew up in the Bronx, had an ex-wife from Ponce. They hung out on Boynton Avenue in the Bronx. And Congressman Rangel can't see that a black man was elected president in the United States. He talks like it's 1962. I agree.
Get over it.
Nothing white people can do to prove anything to anybody. I mean, it's a done deal already.
I agree. So it's intellectually lazy. It just is short circuits everything. It excuses everything. It just is a reason for everything. I agree with you, Keith. I appreciate the call. Thank you, brother. Yeah, I just got to say something about that. You know, Paris is now threatening to sue Fox News, my other employer, my television. You know, brothers and sisters, because of one dopey pundit, Steve Emerson. I've never been a fan of Steve Emerson. I think he's way too extreme, and he said some things that were absolutely untrue. But now Paris, they're extolling the virtue of free speech on the one hand, and they're suing Fox News because this guy, lame brain that he is, gave this opinion. I just think, where is that? I mean, that's so lame. It is so hypocritical of Paris. Get over it. Fox News made a mistake. They apologized multiple times. Let's get past this. But to bring a lawsuit, I mean, it is absolute waste of time, stupid. Listen, everybody, thank you so much for tuning us in this morning. See you right here tomorrow. I love you very much. Terrific calls today. Hasta mañana.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.